Okay, the presentation I'm going to give is on using Meteor Echoes to improve radar performance. This work was done at the Defense Science and Technology Organization, and it was also done in collaboration with the Center for Sensor Signal and Information Processing and the University of Adelaide. Okay, I'm going to start by talking about the Jindalee Over the Horizon Radar Network. And what we've got here is in the center of Australia in Alice Springs, we've got the Jindalee radar, and this shows the radar's coverage. It's a long-range radar system which can detect aircrafts and ships thousands of kilometres away from Australia or from the centre of Australia. So as you can see, it can see into international waters and into Indonesia and places like Philippines. This radar is augmented by two other radars, one in at Long Reach in Queensland and another radar at Laverton. The radar in Laverton in Western Australia is actually two radar systems, and you can see with these three radars you can get a significant coverage of the northwest of Australia, and these radars hence can provide early warning capability for detecting aircrafts, ships, illegal immigrants, and it also can provide you with oceanographic information. So how do these radars manage to detect aircrafts and things so far away? Well, they use the ionosphere. So here we've got a transmitter which sends out energy up into the ionosphere, which is a layer of ionization hundreds of kilometers above, 100 to 300 kilometers above the Earth's surface. And these signals then bounce off the ionosphere and hit the aircrafts or ships, and we get returned energy from them back via the ionosphere and back to the receiver. A model of this is out in the exhibition, and for those of you interested can have a look at it. So by using this, it can propagate signals over the horizon and so can send energy around the surface of the Earth. And so you can obtain 1,000 to 3,000 kilometers of range with these radar systems. These radars typically cost in the hundreds of millions of dollars, and what I've shown here is the Jindalee radar system in Alice Springs. And as you can see, these metal poles, which may look like barbed wire fences, but they're actually antennas, which stretch for 3 kilometers in length. So it's almost like from the city of Melbourne out to Collingwood. And here's a few other pictures of these antennas as shown here. And what we also have is a main radar control unit where an operator can look at these displays, which will show information about aircrafts and ships, such as how far they are away from Alice Springs, what sort of speeds the aircraft are doing. And he can then tell whether a particular aircraft is a commercial aircraft or if it is, in fact, a hostile aircraft. And he can tell whether it's a cargo ship or whether it's a Navy ship approaching Australia. Okay, so I'll talk about Jindalee, and I'll come back to it again a little later when I show how you can use meteors to improve their performance. But what I'll speak about now is so-called a surface wave rapidly deployable radar system. And this system cost a tenth of the cost of the previous radars I mentioned. And typically what you've got is a transmitter close to the ocean surface, and you've got a receiving system as well, which contains a number of antennas, as you can see here. And what you can do with this system is you can run onto a beach, for example, and quickly plant these antennas up in a matter of a day, say, and start detecting targets up to 300 kilometers away. Now, one thing that's very important for these radar systems, because they're rapidly deployable, is to know exactly where you place these sensors when you put them into the ground. And also, because these antennas are very cheaply designed, you need to know how these antennas interact with each other. So what we tried to do in this work is to see how you can actually do this. And so we are trying to estimate the positions of the antennas and their interactions. And as I will show you, you can actually use meteor echoes to do this. Okay, let's just consider an example of trying to estimate the positions of those antennas. So say these were three antennas which we, and this is where we want to place them, but say we, the actual place we put them was slightly off those yellow circles. The fact that they're slightly off doesn't matter as long as you can tell exactly where they're located. So the question is, how can we estimate where these three sensors are located? Okay, say we put a source in the far field. By a source, I mean a transmitter of some sort, well away from the radar. Then initially you will get spherical wavefronts or curved wavefronts, but as this wave propagates towards these antennas, they start becoming what's known as planar wavefronts, as you can see there. So as long as this transmitter is sufficiently far away from the antennas, we will get planar wavefronts. Now, by measuring the time delay for a signal to reach one antenna compared to this other antenna, you can actually estimate the Y position error between these two antennas. So you can measure how far they are apart in the Y direction. Similarly, if we put another source along here, say, then we can estimate from the time delay the signal takes to come here to this one here, we can estimate the next displacement error. And we can work out how far away they're apart in the X direction. So by using two sources, we can estimate the positions of the antennas. But it turns out you have to actually work out how these antennas interact with each other as well. And that becomes a complex problem. But it turns out if you formulate it mathematically, then by using 20 of these sources, you can estimate the positions and how these antennas interact with each other. Okay, that's pretty good. But we need 20 external sources well away from the radar, which means it could be hundreds of kilometers away from the radar. So how can we do that? That's going to be very costly and time-consuming. But what I'll show you now is how you can use meteors to do this. Okay, let's consider meteor observations. What I've got here is data collected from a meteor radar where we've got range up here and time here. And right at the front, you can see these returns, which we've seen here, which are actually returns obtained from meteors themselves, meteor trails, and so-called head echoes, which I'll get to in a moment. So what's happening here is radar energy is being sent out, and for these head echoes, which is right at the front here, you can see a slant here, those returns are returns which are received. The radar's energy hits something around the meteorite itself, and energy is received back there and there. And what you can see, with this one especially, you can see a clear slope, and that indicates that the range is decreasing over time, which is illustrating that the meteorite is actually coming towards the radar. In this case up here, you can see the opposite. So that case, the meteorite is actually going away from the radar. So that's the head echo or return we get from something associated with the meteorite itself. What I'm going to exploit is this long return here, which lasts for quite a long time, could last from 1 second to 20, 30 seconds, even a minute. And these are so-called trail echoes, which are returns you get from the trail of ionization that's formed when a meteorite enters the atmosphere. And what I'll show you now is some Jindal radar down here, and show you how the Jindal radar, when it sends out energy to hit the meteor trail or an ionized layer formed by the meteorite, and this energy is then sent back to the radar via a number of possible propagation paths. So here we've got some Jindal data. We've got range up here and time here again. And a lot of these bright spots you see here turn out to be returns from meteor trails. So even though you may not see many meteors out there when you look in the sky, it turns out that even something as small as a pinhead can cause an ionization trail, which results in the radar receiving this little spot here, or this is another one, and so on. That's only just 30 seconds worth of data, and you can see we've obtained about 10 or 15 returns for meteors. So let's just look at some of the properties. As I showed you, you get numerous echoes. In just 30 seconds, we obtained about 15 echoes. They turn out to be separable. Each of those red circles didn't overlap with each other, and that's quite often the case, that you can separate them out. And that turns out to be very useful when you develop techniques to exploit these echoes. They are free sources. That we're not putting a transmitter out there. They're just reflecting back energy we send out to detect aircrafts and ships. And it turns out they can be treated as equivalent to having an external source well away from the radar. And here I've got an example where I plotted the phase across a number of antennas, and I've showed three different time instances of this. And you can see a fairly linear variation. And that indicates that these have got so-called planar wavefronts, which means you can treat them just like external sources. Okay, now we've got meteor echoes, which means we've got plenty of sources. As I mentioned to you, to estimate the sensor positions or the antenna positions and the interactions between the antennas, we need a number of sources. And we've got plenty now to use. So we can develop a mathematical model which indicates how these unknowns affect radar performance. And this gives us a so-called accuracy measure, which will tell us how, if you don't know the positions of the antennas, how the accuracy is going to be degraded by not knowing that. And then we come up with an iterative technique that tries to maximize this so-called accuracy measure. And the key lies in this thing here, where if we maximize this accuracy measure, we can estimate our unknown parameters. So right at the maximum of that accuracy measure, which is a function, a multidimensional function, we can get the unknown positions of the antennas and information of how the antennas interact with each other. Okay, here's a simulation example where we've got a number of antennas, 16 antennas, and this shows you the position errors or how badly you know where the antennas are located. So initially, we don't know too much about them, and you can see these circles here showing that we don't have much of a knowledge. But after applying this technique, you can see the errors have significantly decreased. In other words, we've been able to locate exactly, almost exactly where these antennas are, and so we can significantly improve radar performance. Okay, now that was simulation results. I'll move on to some real results which show how you can actually apply this technique to a slightly different problem, which is trying to use them with Jindalee. Jindalee has a sophisticated calibration system which measures gain and phase variations across its 3 kilometer long antenna array. It doesn't have any position errors, but it's got phase gain and phase variations between them. And so as a result of this, you've got to have cables which inject special signals right along the array, and that's very costly. It could cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. But what I propose here is to use meteor trail echoes to do exactly the same. And so instead of having to have these special cables which take a long time to deploy, in a matter of 30 seconds or so, you can collect sufficient meteor echoes, and using the software developed, you can estimate the unknown gain and phase variations. And here's some results obtained with the Jindalee radar, which shows some phase measurements across the antenna. What the circles show is what the sophisticated calibration system, which costs hundreds of thousands of dollars, has estimated to be the phase errors. What we've done with meteors is shown by the red plus signs show what you can estimate using meteors. And as you can see, both of them seem to correspond pretty well. They're always pretty close, which means by using meteors, you can do almost as well as using this sophisticated calibration scheme. The implications of this is that hardware calibration systems may not be necessary for future radar systems. which means significant savings in the cost and also in the time to fine-tune your radar's performance. So in conclusion, I mentioned to you about the Jindalee radar, how its long-range capability provides Australia with an early warning system which can detect aircrafts and ships thousands of kilometers away, and also detect illegal immigrants, people smuggling, wildlife, etc., and also provides oceanographic information. I spoke to you about meteor trail echoes and how we see numerous number of them, and they turn out to be free. We're not putting any special hardware out. They're just reflecting back energy sent out by the radar for detecting targets. Then I spoke to you about a novel technique of estimating these antenna positions and the interaction between the antennas using meteors. And finally, I spoke about the application to the Jindalee radar, how you can use meteors to fine-tune its performance and the impact it has on future radar design. The radars of the future may not have sophisticated calibration systems, but might use meteor echoes and some software to do the equivalent thing. And so the conclusion is that we can fine-tune the performance of these radars by using returns from meteors. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Dr. Daniel Sullivan from Defence Science and Technology Organisation. Have we got any questions on radar? I'm just intrigued, Daniel, firstly. Were you lying on your back in the desert looking up at Halley's Comet? I mean, what inspired you to think about using meteor trails and meteors for this sort of calibration?
The first thing I did was sort of look at how many sources you would need. And if the answer was two to estimate your unknowns you've got, then you could go out and deploy two transmitters. But to deploy 20 transmitters would be take a long time and would be very costly. And so I thought to myself, you know, what can we use to
bounce it back?
That's right. And it turned out when we investigated meteors, lo and behold, we found out that they can be treated almost as equivalently as an external transmitter.
And they're predictable enough? They show up often enough? I mean, you're just saying that something as small as a pinhead.
That's right, exactly. And in fact, they happen so often that they're normally a problem for the radar in the sense that
they
can actually... it interferes with the detection of aircrafts and ships. But in this bit of work, we've actually used them to our benefit.
And then you can eliminate them from any...
detection? That's right. You can actually, we've got some signal processing techniques to actually eliminate them once you've used this information so that they don't degrade the radar's performance in terms of affecting targets and things like that.
Nifty. Question.
I wanted to ask you a question about the rapid deployment radar. I understand that this work is to do with the way the antenna are employed and the precision with which you have to locate them. How precise do you have to be in lining the antenna up in a straight line and in an equal distance apart?
Yeah, the radar's wavelength is typically about 20 meters, so you need to know them to... I mean, it turns out you can, if you deploy them out to an accuracy of 1 meter or 2 meters, then using this technique, you can actually not affect radar's performance. So as long as you can plant the antennas within about 2 or 3 meters of their design location, then using this technique, you can compensate for it. Does that answer your question?
You also mentioned, I mean, Jindalee is a fixed operation.
That's right.
And you also talked about the possibility of putting in a temporary or a rapidly deployed radar on a beach, for example.
That's right.
With that, I mean, could that mean that we could very quickly come up to speed if we were concerned about, you know, I mean, if we were in a state of conflict or whatever else, that beaches around Australia could suddenly be propagated by rows of radar poles?
Exactly. Like if, for example, Melbourne was being attacked, you could quickly deploy these antennas within a day.
And you'd be confident because of your meteor
testing that
they were accurately placed.
That's right. And then you can detect things. So instead of having to deploy, for example, Jindalee would have taken 6 months to a year to deploy, and that's a long time. Whereas with these modern radars, which are currently being developed, in fact, in Melbourne, by private industry, you can actually deploy them within a day, say, and using meteors, say, you can compensate for any errors and detect targets.
Another question.
Can you actually trace the meteorites and actually find where they land so that people like me could go and grab
Sorry, didn't quite hear you.
Do we know what happens to the meteorites or the meteors that you use? I mean, are they detected on the radar, I think? Is that the question?
Yeah, can you see where they're actually going to land?
So could you spot a dangerous meteor if it was heading our direction?
Oh, you could. Like these meteor... Normally, I think I showed one figure where you had the meteorite itself, which was what I call the head echo, and that showed the range of the meteorite from the radar itself. And you could see a slope. It was getting closer to the radar, and then it disappeared. It burnt up. But say it kept continuing and kept coming closer and closer to the radar without burning up, then you know it's coming to hit you very soon.
So is that a sort of spin-off effect of using meteors in this way?
Definitely would be. Yeah.
Could you get the warning out fast enough, do you think?
You'll have to... Well, it depends which radar you're using. Like with the rapidly deployable one, the range of it is only about 300 kilometers, so I don't know whether you'd have time, but with Jinda Lee, you can look thousands of kilometers away, so you could have sufficient warning.
Can we put in a hotline to the ABC, perhaps, and we'll sort of make sure that we can broadcast the warning if there's a meteor headed in our direction?
In fact, one of the applications of these sort of radars is to detect things like missiles coming, heading towards Australia, for example, and they give you that early warning capability.
Yeah. Right, so not just aircraft and ships, also... missiles and weaponry. You mentioned just briefly, and I just wondered if there was a straightforward explanation, that being able to separate the meteor material that you're using could be useful.
Yeah. Basically, in a nutshell, you're trying to obtain statistics about each meteor itself, and if they interfere, if they're both together, you can still work with it, but it turns out that they actually produce you less information than two echoes that are separated. So you can still use them, but it just means that you get somewhat less information. So. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and a question here.
I noticed that the radar system is targeted at the north of Australia and not the west, presumably because we're not expecting attack or boat people from the south. But could it be used to detect tidal waves coming from Antarctica?
DeepMind needs to get together with you, Dan.
Well, you could put a radar system for that application, but it won't come out of the defence budget. It'll have to come out of some other budget.
I think a classic response. Thank you indeed, Dr. Daniel Solomon, for joining us on that. And thank you to all our speakers.